How are you?
Good.
Now, what I'm going to share with you about now is a confraternity that is an official confraternity of the Dominican Order, known as the Angelic Warfare Confraternity. In order to share with you about this confraternity, I have to tell you a story, and then I'm going to tie in where this confraternity is at these days and why I believe it's so very important for those who are interested in really living out God's plan for love, our bodies, our vocation to be gift, and particularly in the area of the virtue of chastity, how that plays out in the virtue of chastity. But first, the story. You know, you ever hear of this guy by the name of St. Thomas Aquinas? I'm sure you have. And St. Thomas Aquinas was a Dominican early on. You know, he was maybe a second generation Dominican. So he's living in the 13th century. But you know, when he was young, he was brought up, even born into a very, you might want to say, well-off family, one of stature and political connection. You know, in fact, had relatives all across Europe. In fact, kings and princes and the like as part of the Thomas's family. And of course, Thomas's family had very high hopes for Thomas to be somebody of importance. Of course, what he wound up being, as far as importance goes, wasn't quite what they had in mind. But Thomas had many brothers, ruffians, war guys, as you know, sort. And yet from early on, it seemed that Thomas was not this way. Thomas was a very big boy, strong, wide, robusto. All right? So he was a very big boy, but very gentle and very quiet, and actually maybe a little bit shy. And so he didn't speak much. And in fact, this in school got him a nickname, which you've probably heard before. He was known as the dumb ox, and not because he was dumb, although because he didn't talk much, they figured he was dumb, a little thick upstairs, which of course, there's one story that's told about a classmate trying to help him with his studies, you know, obviously trying to befriend this poor guy who is struggling so much, and they got to some really difficult problem, and Thomas was very humble and acquiesced and let the boy help him, you know, so to speak, even though he didn't need any help. And I guess they got to one that this other student was stumped, and Thomas figured it out, you know, just right out like that. And all of a sudden, the boy looks at him and it's like, "Who are you?" You know. So all along, he only opened his mouth under supposedly obedience to his teacher, Albert. He would never share in class. He wasn't one of those annoying people who raised his hand all the time and knew all the answers. No, that was me. I was that annoying guy. And shut up. So not like Thomas in that way. Maybe a little robusto, though. Though not tall. Anyway, so anyhow, Thomas is growing up, and he's quite young, you know, and he feels that he's called to become a Dominican, which is this newfangled preaching order that, honestly, because they're new, the mendicants were new. Francis and Dominic, of course, had just not so long before started their thing. They were looked at, certainly by society, as very strange. And even within the church was a little slow to be okay with this. I mean, people were out preaching who weren't technically part of the clergy. They're a little uncomfortable about that. You know, like there's this whole thing with like they're living this vow of poverty and they're yet, you know, and there's this whole, you might want to say, a little bit of suspicion that even the clergy have and some church leaders have of the Franciscans and the Dominicans. See? So now imagine Thomas's family, a politically connected, well-to-do family that doesn't so much have an issue with Thomas being called to religious life, but really wants him to be a person of importance and maybe of equally political strength as any king might be. And so since his uncle was the abbot of Monte Cassino, which was, of course, the famous Benedictine monastery there, they thought, hey, let's get Thomas to be a Benedictine. He'll be right in line for being the abbot, and then he'll have all kinds of political power. And let's face it, his family really wanted to be able to use him as a puppet and have the power and their way through him. That's why they wanted him in the post, eh? It wasn't, you know, really that they had all these grandiose thoughts about him being a religious. It's that they wanted to have their son in the right place, right? So that being said, when Thomas comes and says, I want to be a Dominican, I believe God is calling me to become a begging preacher, they just did not respond very nicely. They were not thrilled with the idea. No son of mine. And in that time, being a beggar would have been an insult to a family with means, an upper-class family, that one of their children was a beggar. Scandalous. So, you know, you don't love us, Thomas. You want to go be a beggar. It's going to be terrible for us as a family. It's going to be a scandal and all these. You can imagine all the things that he hears. But he knows that this is what Almighty God is calling him to do. So they tried to deter him from this call, and nothing works. The Dominicans finally, after Thomas goes ahead and joins them, the Dominicans realize that this is a bad scene, that Thomas is near to his family, that his family is trying to, you know, be an obstacle to his vocation. And so they try to shuffle Thomas out of Italy and off to Paris. And on the way, Thomas's family does only what a loving family that cares about their child could do. They abduct him, and they throw him in a prison tower on his way out of Italy. Very caring family. This is tough love, right? Whatever. So, so they put him in the prison in one of their, you know, castles, I suppose. And so he's in the prison tower, and of course, he's going to stay in there until he gives up his joining the Dominicans. Not going to come out. We're not letting you out. No. Can't come out. So they go in and they try to, again, continually encourage him or discourage him from becoming a Dominican. Nothing works. Send his sisters, whom Thomas loved very, very much, in to talk with him, to speak some reason to your brother. And he just is so tender with them, but they actually decide, no, he's got a vocation. And they start sneaking him things that he's not supposed to have, like books, you know, like the Bible, you know, like that's all great stuff. They're trying to help him, you know. So his sisters wound up being an ally, two allies to him, which was wonderful. But so story goes on that nothing works after a long time being in that prison tower. Now, Thomas, mind you, is probably 16 years old. Let's just say roughly 16 years old when this is going on. So he's young. Young guy. Well, his brothers, I think prompted by the evil one, come up with a plan that they know will succeed. They decide that the only way that Thomas will give up being a Dominican is if he sins against his vows. That he'll give up being a Dominican, he'll be discouraged, he'll feel himself unworthy, what have you, and he'll shrug off the idea of religious life altogether. So we'll get him to commit a mortal sin, and then that'll be the end of it. Now, of course, this is the distorted logic of evil. Committing a mortal sin is far better than being a Dominican, in their view, in the family's view. Isn't that crazy? So, you know, so much for his soul. We're talking about political standing now, right? Right? So here we go. So what they do is they go into town and they hire a professional woman. How's that? Somebody who would, you know, be okay with receiving some money for some sexual favors, a prostitute, and they take the prostitute to the prison tower and they put her into the tower and lock the door. They figure there's no way they can lose now. Now, you've got to imagine the scene. Place yourself in that cell, this cold, dreary place. It's not, you know, it's not the Hilton that they had Thomas in this place. So Thomas is probably over in the corner, sitting there, perhaps reading one of the books that he got snuck. And then he catches sight of this woman as she comes into the light of the fire. Now, you can only imagine what must be going through Thomas's mind. Remember what I said about Thomas. He's a big guy, but he's a quiet guy. Right? Well, guess what? There is one or two times in his life when he raised his voice. And this was one of them. Supposedly what happened is, as the woman approached him to seduce him, Thomas told later in life about this experience to a very dear friend, Brother Reginald. Actually, was it Father Reginald, his confessor? I don't remember. Was it just a friend or was it his confessor? But anyhow, Reginald, right? So this is what happened, that he took a torch from the fire upon seeing the woman and pointed the torch at her and began to scream and chase her out of the cell. Ah! Of course, you know. The woman's like, ah! Beating on the door in Italian, something. Get me out of here! He's a lunatic! Get me out of here! He's got fire! You know, like whatever. So she's banging on the door. The brothers open, don't know what's going on. You know, all this ruckus, you know, going on. And like they let the woman out. They slam the door closed. Supposedly what happened was that Thomas said he made a cross with the brand in the door, fell down on his knees before the cross, and begged God to save him from this attack on his purity, from this temptation. Now, according to what Thomas said, angels appeared to him. And they held a cord. And tradition says that the cord had 15 knots in it. And they wrapped this cord around Thomas's waist, pulled it tight, saying, "Behold the cord of chastity against which no temptation and attack will prevail." Thomas said, from that moment on, he was never tempted, never even tempted to sin against the virtue of chastity. And he actually attributes all the understanding that he had of the faith to his purity. He knew the scriptures inside and out, memorized them, even memorized the commentaries of the early fathers, which, by the way, when he wrote his commentary, saying the commentaries on the early fathers, that was all done by memory, you know. Could you imagine? Go check out Thomas's commentaries on the scriptures and how he cites the fathers of the church, and remember that he didn't have all the manuscripts sitting out where he was doing research. It just says something about his mind, his memory. Well, he said that the reason he could understand was because he knew in the scripture it said, "Blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God." He knew that. I tell young people all the time, you want to know God, you want to see God, you want to understand the faith, be pure. It's the only way. And Thomas's purity, he said, helped him to reach those heights of understanding. The angelic doctor. Right? Well, it's interesting to note that it wasn't very long. Sometime in the 16th century, perhaps early 1600s, when it became known that people actually were wearing a cord in honor of St. Thomas and in an attempt and a hope to preserve their virtue of chastity. So this became, right from the people, probably sometime in the 1500s, a common popular practice. And a confraternity developed called the Confraternity of the Cord of St. Thomas, otherwise known as the Angelic Warfare Confraternity. Okay. And it was on fire and very popular from that point all the way through till probably the, you know, early to mid-1900s. Even in the United States of America, it came over. And it was not uncommon for school children to be enrolled in the early part of the 1900s, maybe even into the 50s. So this is something that's been around for a long time. Blessed Pier Giorgio was a member of the Angelic Warfare Confraternity and also a Third Order Dominican. So maybe that's a blessed that you've heard of, but he was an Angelic Warfare Confraternity member. So what happened? Well, you know, it's interesting. What happened was, as a lot of things happened, a lot of popular devotions that were very big sort of, you know, when the 60s came around, sort of went out of popularity. A lot of them were not renewed. The devotions were dropped by some religious communities in certain cases. In other cases, they were just sort of went out of fad. It wasn't being done anymore. And the Angelic Warfare Confraternity was sort of in that boat. It went for a lot of years where people had been members. It was very common for all Dominicans that during their novitiate year to become members of the confraternity and to say the prayers associated with the confraternity. But then eventually it just wasn't happening anymore. Except there was this one group of lay Dominicans that are still around in New Hope, Kentucky, the St. Martin de Porres community, that really kept this thing going. They still had literature on it. The Dominican order themselves sent them all the stuff that they had on the Angelic Warfare Confraternity. It just kind of dumped them with all the stuff because they were deciding to keep this thing going. And they had a few members that were connected with that community. You know, it was growing in certain countries. It started to grow in Africa, believe it or not, very popular. But in the United States, it was, for all intents and purposes, dying. And my friend Theo tells me she was ready for it to die. Because while she wanted to keep it around, there was just no interest. It was becoming, in a sense, why are we still doing this kind of idea? It's a practical question when you have only so many things you can do. But they didn't give it up, those New Hope Dominicans. Thank God bless them. Well, simultaneously, something really strange happened. I'm not trying to place myself into Angelic Warfare Confraternity history, but I will actually place my daughter in Angelic Warfare Confraternity history, because my oldest daughter, Miranda, when she was 7, read a biography of St. Thomas Aquinas that was written by Mary Fabian Windeatt. Have you ever seen those Tan books, those Story of Saints? Well, that was brilliantly written. I mean, I think it's one of her best. She wrote it from Thomas's perspective in the first person as Thomas is speaking to the reader. And at the end, it talks about this Angelic Warfare Confraternity. Now, you remember when she was writing, of course, it's that time when it was still probably fairly popular, right? So she writes about this. And so my daughter comes to me and says, "Dad, I want to join the Angelic Warfare Confraternity." I'm like, "The what? What you want to join the what?" I don't, you know, she says, "Well, look here in this book." And she tells me the whole thing. It's like, chat. I mean, she's 7. I'm like, "Chastity? She struggle with chastity? Want to tell me something?" It's like, "Well, what's going on?" And she's like, "I don't know, Dad. I just feel like this is how I'm supposed to do this." And I'm like, "Okay." So I, like a good dad, investigate, right? So like I find a third order community in the not really area of where I live, but at least in New Jersey, and I inquire into this, and they inquire, and of course I don't know Theo yet and the people at New Hope, and yet I find out later on that when they inquired, who'd they inquire with? The only people that had any information about this. Right? So they call me back, and they're like, "Oh, yes, it's still around, although it's not really done that much anymore, but it is still around, and you can still join, and we just think that, you know, 7 is a little young." I'm like, "Yeah, okay, I get that." Now, at this point in my life, I'm teaching the theology of the body and John Paul II, so I'm already involved in this sort of thing. This is maybe back in 2001 or so. And but yet something comes over my heart. And I say, well, then I'll join. Why not? I'm working with chastity and the virtue of chastity. And, you know, I could use help living out God's plan for my sexuality. And, you know, I'm not impervious to temptation. And like, you know, I knew in that point in my life that I was still struggling with the residual effects of my past sin. You know? With the images I had seen when I was 15 years old. Any guy in the room can tell you those images don't leave. It's like imprinted. Right? So they become fodder for temptation, all those things that are still in there. And I knew that while I was, you know, doing my all to live purely, that this stuff from left over from choices I had made and from giving in to temptation in my past was still with me. And I needed help with that to make that a little bit easier. Maybe the grace of this confraternity can do that for me. I want to be the best husband I can be. I want to be I want to love my wife Shannon, who I adore in the best way, and not in the sense that I shouldn't adore her, Father. Just so you know, I mean that, you know, analogously. So I want to be all the kind of man I'm supposed to be for her, and maybe this will help me. Hey, so I said, yeah, let's go do it. So, of course, I had this enrollment. It so happened at the time that the Third Order, Dominican head of the Third Order, was with the community. And on February 2nd, the Feast of the Presentation, 2002, I was enrolled with my family and Miranda glowing. I got my dad to do this. So time goes on, and I'm starting to learn more about this confraternity, and, you know, all roads lead to Rome. You know, like, all roads lead to New Hope. So, like, so I eventually get in touch with the New Hope Dominicans, and I start talking about my work. And you know what they do? They say, well, you know, we have this youth conference we're doing. Why don't you come down and check out the conference, et cetera, and maybe you could do a workshop on the confraternity. You know, and this is after a number of conversations that I had with them down there. I said, sure. So the first year I went down was a long time ago now. And this is the amazing thing. I would have never gotten in contact with the sister servants here, most likely, if it hadn't been for Ignite. And if it hadn't, I wouldn't have never gotten in contact with Ignite if somehow I didn't get in touch with Theo. And I would have never thought to get in touch with the New Hope Dominicans and Theo if I hadn't joined this confraternity and if my daughter hadn't read that biography. I mean, it's just like, you know, hysterical how this is all coming together and how the Lord does write our path, doesn't he? Anyhow, what's the punchline? Well, the punchline is that all of a sudden there's a groundswell of interest in this confraternity. We start telling young people and not so young people, young adults, grown married men, religious, priests, about this confraternity. And little by little, as the years go on, more and more people are interested. More and more people want to join. I'm happy to say that within a couple of years of being at the Ignite Conference, my daughter went as a freshman, and guess what she did? She enrolled at the Ignite Conference, the one who started the whole thing for me, right? So she enrolled, and then the next year we had another enrollment, and the next year we all of a sudden had much more interest. We had like 45 people interested. And then the next year we had over 60 enrollments. And then this past year we had 150 enrollments. We have had in the last year, according to our director, 1,000 people enroll in the Angelic Warfare Confraternity. And why is this? I guess this is the question. This is ancient confraternity. Why is it that it went out of fashion and it came back? Well, I think the reason is because we all know that in our time, God's plan for our sexuality, God's plan for marriage, God's plan for human love is being distorted and attacked in ways that we can't even quantify. Young people, everywhere they turn, the pornography. You look at the media and the way everything's expressed in advertisements. What they're bombarded with everywhere they turn is unparalleled in the history of humankind. The way in which, yeah, there were always sins and always these sorts of things, but the cultural acceptance of such things, whereby it's the norm to accept the sin as normal, is unparalleled. My friends, we are under special attack. It's a diabolical, straight from the pit of hell attack. Like that which inspired Thomas's brothers to attack his chastity. And just like Thomas had a vocation that was from God, and the devil knew what Thomas was going to do and wanted to destroy that vocation. And the way to destroy that vocation was to destroy his purity. We too have a vocation. It's the vocation to be gift. It's our baptismal vocation. It's our vocation from creation. It's the fundamental and innate vocation, John Paul II said, of every human being, to love as God loves in and through our bodies. Right? And that vocation is under attack in our time. So I think the reason there's this piqued interest is because young people and young adults and even some grown people know that they are under attack. That the temptations they face are many and varied and coming from all directions. And that as a result, they need special protection and they need a special grace in order to combat these temptations. In order to live God's plan in purity. And that is precisely what the Angelic Warfare Confraternity provides. It is actually known traditionally as the militia. It's a militia. So, you know, you're to do battle. And that also gives it an interesting character because it's not just on the defense, yo. It's not like, you know, the attacks are coming and we're like, it's like, no, we are a militia going out to battle for God's plan for purity. To be the army that is going to fight the evil one and the distortions in our world. And just like in an army, there are many different roles. You got the people who are fighting on the front lines. You got the people who are under attack. You've got people who are in a supportive role. That's also what this confraternity can be. We had a wonderful grown man join the confraternity. And he admitted this at the conference this past year. He said, I joined the confraternity because I thought, you know, while I don't necessarily struggle with my purity anymore, I want to be part of this thing. I want to stand against the evil one and what he's doing. And I want to play a supportive role through my prayers for all the people in this confraternity in their fight for purity. So you can join just to be part of the community because everybody who's in the confraternity not only receives special graces, but receives the strength in their fight to protect their purity of the prayers of all confraternity members. So the more this thing grows, the more grace, the more prayers, the stronger we become. And that's profound. So you can join if you're struggling fighting temptation and you just want to live pure, if you just recognize that we live in a world that's difficult and you need special grace to safeguard yourself, or if you want to play a supportive role and be part of that militia to fight against the distortions and the lies and the temptations, or to contribute by your prayers to strengthening others. There are many levels in which you can join, or reasons why you can join. I suggest this only because it's not just for young people. It's for young adults. It's for married men. It's for single men. It's for married women. It's for single women. It's for priests. It's for religious. Everybody is called to live a life of purity. Everybody is called to live a life of chastity. We all have to live in this world. And while we may not all struggle the same, we can all be part of the fight. And we can all strengthen the brethren. Okay, so what's involved? And I'm bringing this out to you because I have seen grace in my own life that I can't even describe to you come from this confraternity. One of the graces that it brought me is one of the graces that I really hoped it would. And that is the purification of my memory. It's remarkable. But I just simply do not have the same kind of old things coming back to me from my life before. I don't. And I couldn't do that. I have seen my own desire to live a life of purity be matched by God's grace, to give me more of a naturalness and ease in my living out of God's plan. So it's not quite the struggle that maybe at certain times it was. Who would like that naturalness and ease? St. Thomas didn't even have any temptations to sin against chastity after the cord. You know, members wear the cord. It's like, hey, I'm not promising you you're never going to be tempted, but the gift of perfect chastity, which was a special gift that Thomas got, is something we should all be striving for and begging our Lord for. Give me the gift of perfect chastity, that I always look upon others purely, that all of my drives and urges and emotions and desires are ordered to the truth of your love, to the dignity of the human person. Wow. That would be great, wouldn't it? So we pray for that. And God supplies the grace we need in God's time. But I can tell you this, in my own life, the special grace that came from that confraternity has been such a blessing. So much so that I have to let others know about it, which is why I had to bring it here, and we wanted to talk about it here. And I'm telling you, it is something that is, it's catching like fire. I think people know why. Okay. Now, if you want to join, what is something that you should know? Well, the first is that you have to be officially enrolled. Okay, you have to be officially enrolled in the confraternity through a solemn ceremony of enrollment that is handled by either a Dominican priest or by a priest that's been given permission by the director of the confraternity. Just a little plug. Father David Carter has been given official permission by the director of the confraternity, okay? It just so happened. I have the email on my BlackBerry if you don't believe me. So that's number one. You have to be enrolled through this solemn ceremony. What is it that you are promising? Because that's a big thing, right? You're promising to pursue the truth and to protect holy chastity. Well, God's honest truth is you're probably desiring those things anyway, right? You're probably trying to discover as much as you can about your faith and about the Lord and to really understand what our faith is about, particularly in the area of chastity. And you probably are desiring to live out that plan. So I would guess that most people are probably in that boat, okay? So you promise to pursue chastity and truth. Chastity just meaning living God's plan, by the way. Don't think this means celibacy, okay? That's important. Celibacy is a particular thing, but chastity is something different, okay? Chastity is just living God's plan for love and sex, and that's an everybody virtue, okay? Whether you're a priest, religious, a single person, a married person, it's for everybody, right? Okay? We all live it differently according to our state in life, right? But nevertheless, so it's living the virtue of chastity, no matter what your state, appropriate to that state, okay? Now, what do you have to do? Well, there's two prayers of the confraternity. There's a prayer to St. Thomas for purity, to Jesus of St. Thomas for purity, and to St. Thomas for purity. So you're praying a prayer to Thomas, begging him to be to intercede for you to receive this grace you'll need to be pure. And you pray a prayer that Thomas actually wrote to Jesus for purity. In fact, some people think that the prayer of the confraternity that is written to Jesus may have even been some form of the prayer that he prayed when he fell on his knees before the cross in the prison tower, which is sort of a neat thing, you know? So two prayers, short too, easy to memorize. I'm going to end this by singing a song for you, so it'll be connected to that. So those two prayers. So you make this promise, and you promise to say these two prayers. You promise to wear the cord, which is a cord of 15 knots around your waist, or the medal of the confraternity, one or the other. You don't have to do both, one or the other. My daughter has this great idea. She wore the cord. She likes wearing the cord. She's decided she's going to wear the cord until her wedding night, and she wants her husband to remove the cord, and from then on, she's going to wear the medal. That's her little plan. Wouldn't you? Isn't that the kind of thing that, like, as a father, you just go, "Oh, that's just wonderful." That's a great idea. So she came up with that one all on her own. Now, thank you, Jesus. So you can wear one or the other, but you have to wear one or the other. Of course, you can take it off sometimes. You know, like if you're going to go play baseball and you can't have the, I have the medal here. The one side has St. Thomas being girded by the angels, and the other on this one has Mary and Jesus represented symbolically, but the traditional medal has Our Lady of the Rosary with St. Dominic and St. Catherine on the back. Okay? What is it that you take Thomas as your special patron in your quest for purity? So St. Thomas becomes your special patron, interceding for you before our Lord for this grace for you. And you take Our Lady of the Rosary as your special patron. So Our Lady of the Rosary now is assigned to you, Our Lady under the title, Our Lady of the Rosary, right? Is assigned specifically to you in your quest for purity. How about that? And you can go to her. And you have a special relationship with her now in this particular way. So that's pretty awesome, I think. There's 15 Hail Marys that confraternity members say. It goes along with the 15 knots in the cord. And it's one Hail Mary for every mystery of the rosary. So the idea is that confraternity members ought to be clinging to the rosary of the Blessed Virgin Mary. They have obviously she's a patroness, you know, so saying the rosary is highly recommended and important, but not mandatory. And even the 15 Hail Marys, by the way, is very strongly urged, and there's a lot of grace that can come from those prayers, not only for yourself, but for all confraternity members, but there's no sin if you don't do the prayers. So by joining, it's not like, gosh, I forgot the prayers today, or things have been really crazy, or I've kind of been off it for a little while. There's no sin. You're not going to get necessarily the grace in the same way, but there's no sin. Okay. So, like, for example, I know that this is true for religious communities where a number of members have joined. To ask them with their rosaries and their divine office and everything else to, like, heap another devotion on top is really a lot to ask. You know, it's like, here's 15 more Hail Marys. And, oh, by the way, why don't you do three more Divine Mercy chaplets while you're at it? And, don't forget all these devotions to the Sacred Heart. I mean, gosh, if you did everything, you wouldn't have time to do anything else, right? So obviously what sometimes happens is just the prayer of St. Thomas and to Jesus, the two prayers, are sometimes connected to a communal prayer. Like they might with day prayer say these two prayers. I think that's how the Nashville Dominicans do it. That they say the confraternity prayers in association with their daytime prayer, or maybe with one of their meals. So again, in your own life, if you've made other commitments, we don't have to heap commitments upon commitments. You find a way to assimilate it. But typically speaking, you're asked to pray 15 Hail Marys every day for purity. Okay, so I guess that what I'm trying to explain is the burdens, quote unquote, of this confraternity are not really outside what you may already be doing, right? You're already probably seeking chastity. You're already trying to pursue truth. You're probably already somewhat devoted to the Holy Rosary, right? And you're adding wearing the cord or the medal and the two prayers, which are not really that long. Now, I could tell you, for that output, the grace that you get for that little bit of output, I'm telling you, the Lord will not be outdone. I mean, this is amazing. It's such a little output, and you get so much in return. So I guess, all in all, while this is a serious commitment, it's not burdensome. The biggest burden of it is that you're committing to it for the rest of your life. And then you're part of that confraternity. And you're privy to all the graces associated with that confraternity in the Dominican order, as well as you'll be connected with the other in the community. We have for young people, we have a Facebook group that, you know, the confraternity members only, you know, where they go back and forth. It's fun. Somebody put up a poll. What do you like wearing better, the cord or the medal? And they're like, and everybody's involved. You know, put a little post. They go, okay, well, we have 45 people who say they like the cord, but no, only 10 like the medal. You know, like, it's just things that, you know, young people do. For fun, right? Isn't it like, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, when you want to take it off for swimming, you just make sure you put it back on. You know, if you have to take a shower, you put it back on. That's, you know, there's obviously, you want to wear it. Some people have a hard time sleeping with things like that. That's okay. Although I think nighttime is an important time to wear it. You know, if people say, what's the difference between this and True Love Waits? Well, you know, you have True Love Waits, you might get like a little purity ring, which kind of reminds you that you've made a pledge, right? But that ring doesn't like send this protection around you, see? That cord, that's that, like, after Thomas had that cord, it's like he wasn't even tempted. That was like, you know, against which no temptation shall prevail. I don't know, I want the cord, right? That's got a different kind of grace. It's a confraternity. It's like, you know, True Love Waits on steroids. It's like huge, you know? It's a big, strong, powerful. Although I don't recommend steroids, as you know from my last conversation about the body as a machine and not really being you and all that fun stuff, right? Now, so I'm just throwing this out to you because I have seen its grace in my life. This is a movement that I think is exciting. It may be a movement you want to be a part of, and there are many levels in which you can contribute to this, and I know it's going to be a grace for you. So what we've done is at the end of the Mass tomorrow, we have scheduled an enrollment. And so from now on, I just would like you to ask, I mean, in light of everything that we've been talking about the threefold concupiscence that we all have to deal with, about the way we look at our world and we see the way in which it attacks this fundamental teaching of our faith and how difficult it makes it sometimes to live it out. If you want to be a better husband, if you want to be a better wife, if you want to be a better, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, person, priest, religious, mother, father, I think this confraternity can help you. It's helped me. Oh, we have the packets. You have the packets. So consider that. Pray about that. When we have prayer time coming up soon and, you know, throughout the rest of the time, just really ask the Lord, Lord, is this something you want me to do? Is this something I should do? And we'll have the enrollment. And whoever joins, great. And if you don't, that's fine too. Maybe you don't want to do it right now. You want to do it later. You can learn more about it. But please consider it. I think it can be something, really something special for you. Yes. Yes. We have religious order. We have religious who aren't Dominicans who join the Angelic Warfare Confraternity. All right? So it does not preclude you from joining that confraternity yet. You're still okay, I think, canonically. Now, I want to sing a song to close. How's that? I like to sing. I don't do it much. I don't think that many of the sister servants have ever heard me sing. After this, they might say, "We're really grateful we didn't." No, just kidding. Hopefully, that's not true. Early on, I had written this song whereby I had taken the two prayers and put them together and put it to music. So that's what I'm going to do. And the refrain is really simple, and so I'm hoping that you'll sing along. Chosen lily of innocence, pure Saint Thomas, I need you to be. be with me now. Baptismal robe kept chaste, angels girded your waist, and you became like them somehow. So please commend me to Jesus and Mary, the spotless Lamb and the Queen of Chastity, that they may protect my purity, and that I keep my promises faithfully. Every good and perfect gift comes from above. I need God's grace to seek and to find. May he cleanse me within, take my lust and my sin, and wipe all unchaste thoughts from my mind. So please commend me to Jesus and Mary, the spotless Lamb and the Queen of Chastity, that they may protect my purity, and that I keep my promises faithfully. May I share in your purity by wearing this cord, the holy sign of your sweet victory. May I be like you each day until the time when I pray among the angels with you I will be. So please commend me to Jesus and Mary, the spotless Lamb and the Queen of Chastity, that they may protect my purity, and that I keep my promises faithfully. You know it by now. Commend me to Jesus and Mary, the spotless Lamb and the Queen of Chastity, that they may protect my purity, and that I keep my promises faithfully, that they may protect my purity, and that I keep my promises faithfully. And that's all I have to say.